Jetzt war schon hier. I think so. I'm hoping. Okay. Nothing I can do. I took picture to show you like everything was okay, but I don't know why it's not picking up the sound. And it picked it up in the morning when I tried it.
Assets lasting longer than the lifespan that you had predicted. They say it's the group that's that gross book value. Kind of has the reverse effect, I think, but I think as far as they're lasting longer, we should extend the appreciation.
To let you go.
So these are some pick up of new assets that are added to your. And the reverse can happen also if your lifespans are shorter than you expect, you end up with a scenario potentially that group delaying depreciation as the lives of the actual items get shorter, and so you start getting mismatches out of it.
That's important to understand is that if you have an asset that lives longer than its expected life and it stays in the group, there's an adjustment that's needed in order to make sure that you don't have this situation where you have $8 million in a group and then you put $100,000 of new investment in 1 year, and because of the calculation, you effectively expense that $100,000. It's so much, you have so much ability to, or the asset group has a ceiling on how much depreciation expense it can generate, and the $100,000 is so small that it just gets expensed in 1 or 2 years, as opposed to 10.
Okay, so in the example that we're going to talk about, this is, you see three sections going out across the page here. There's a green column, a blue column, and a yellow column here, and those are the different methodologies. And then in the left column is, in column C there, we have some additions that we're showing coming into this asset group. And it has the year of the additions. And then there's also some disposals. And then I've tagged what year we're disposing from as well, because we'll leave that in our calculations. But the assumptions are on this group that it's a 20-year life, and that would be the prescribed life from the PSC. And we treated the additions as if they were just one asset each year, one big asset addition. We have some, and then in the disposals, we have we'll have partial disposals of some of those assets. You'll see down here, I disposed $300,000 and it was 1990 assets. So out of that million, we had a partial disposal of whatever that was, let's say buried cable. We disposed a segment of that cable, and so we took $300,000 off the books. So we kind of have those different additions and deletions kind of happening.
So do I dispose of units out of service? It's retired?
Yes.
So we're not using any salvage value here. We're not dealing with salvage.
Yeah, we tried to. And so if I look, we stopped in the year 2017, and then we just let the depreciation run out to the end of its life. So we can use that kind of as a look here. But if I add up the value of these assets, additions, there should be 8 million. Can you see that on the bottom of the screen? So that's $8 million. And if I go down to the bottom of each of these columns in color, you can see that we've recorded 8 million in depreciation expense for each of the columns. Now, just as a snapshot, you can see that they ended at a different point. So you can see that that blue column ends in year 2036, and this green column over here ends in, I think, 6 years before that, and the yellow column ends about 10 years before that. So the yellow column is done in 2027, it looks like. So that's the different methodologies, but they end up with slightly different results on the timing of that depreciation expense. Go ahead.
So when can you? Is there a time and place where you cannot add another investment into that group. In other words, that's what I'm trying to figure. It's like, so in other words, like say you've got a 20-year life, and we're coming up on the last year of that retirement. Does that mean you can add something into that last year? And so,
as long as the value, as long as the account is still active, not meaning non-zero, it's still an active group, and you can add to it. If it gets fully depreciated, if you get rid of the $8 million and you didn't make an addition, then that group gets retired and you set up a new group.
I think the general idea of where we see this in some of the energy, I think, talking about power use is a group depreciation for office furniture.
Yeah.
And it's a group that never ends, so they add to it every year and they remove from it every year. And it smooths those fluctuations on a perpetual group. If the depreciation prescribed rate matches the actual life of the furniture, it works pretty well.
And remember, these are like-kind assets. So if there's a change in technology or a replacement of this type of asset, let's say this is a type of plant that is changed by technology. Now, instead of copper, maybe we go to fiber, right? So we wouldn't mix the fiber with the copper. We'd start a new group and segregate those assets accordingly. But it can continue as a group with additions and deletions indefinitely. So.
But in the instance of this gentleman was talking about where he said you stop that group and you start another group. When you start another group, there's not 20 years. There's only one thing in there in 1 year. And so how is that?
Well, when you start a new group, any new group starts with an investment for a given year, and you have a prescribed economic life or prescribed life and appreciation rate.
Until you start adding other things, it's kind of just like straight line. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And in fact, you'll see that these methodologies are exactly the same for the first few years until we end up with some differences in timing that create differences. And so it's a good question, and I can kind of show you how that looks. But if I go to the top of the spreadsheet where this depreciation starts, you can see that in year one, with that $1 million addition, that each of the methods has 50,000 of depreciation. So 50, 50,
if you make
the
screen size about 62%, I think you can see all the columns.
Can you guys still see it if I do that?
We can see it, but we don't know if we can read it.
We'll
see.
That's where we had it before.
Ooh, sorry, too far. Oh, no.
Too big.
We'll get it. Just a second here.
Goldilocks is right.
This keypad is driving me nuts, but no, I'll get it here. Oh, my goodness.
Sign. You're hitting this bar. Hit the minus sign if you want
to. Is that about right for you?
Yeah.
You guys still read it?
That's an eye test.
Okay. And so you can see at the beginning of the depreciation here, these first few years, in fact, all the way out to about 20 years, well, until our first disposal, it stays the same. So if you look at each of those years, in that last year that I've highlighted there, it's 235, 235, 235. Okay. So this first example that I'm showing you is an asset group that we have a prescribed life of 20 years. And what we find over time is that the assets are lasting a little longer than 20 years. And so there will be a portion of the rate, the basis in those assets that stays longer than the prescribed life. And so what that does is it has an effect on the depreciation calculation, which accelerates it slightly to what maybe that last addition would have been if you would have calculated it by itself. Now the opposite is true if that asset, let's say we have a 10-year asset and it's a highly changing asset, a technology software-based asset, something, and we find that it is no longer serviceable after 7 years. We have to take that service. And so if that happens consistently, then you have the opposite effect, where the effect on the group is a deceleration of depreciation expense. And so we'll see that on the second example. But this first one is an acceleration example, and it typically is evidenced by assets that last longer than their prescribed life. Now, what you see in symptoms, and Douglas mentioned this previously, I kind of listed these up on our our sheet up here, but if you see a new asset addition that disappears fairly quickly from the rate base through depreciation expense, that would be an indication that you have an acceleration. And if you extended out the life of your assets from a point in time, like I just did my year-end audit, if I were to take that group and extend it all the way out, how long does that asset group last? Does it last 20 years or does it last 4 years? And if I have additions in the most recent year, I wouldn't expect those to disappear in 1 or 2 years. But I wouldn't. I also, because it's part of the group, I wouldn't expect them to last the full 20 either, because they are part of that common group. So it's got to be somewhere in between, and that's kind of what we're looking at is that difference, and is there a significant acceleration or not. Now, so what are the remedies to that if you had, and that's kind of what we're talking about today, is different ways to manage depreciation expense for the group and what's appropriate. But if we've had an asset group in my company that consistently we find that the assets are lasting longer than their prescribed life, it would be a situation where it might be appropriate for me to come back to the commission and ask them to give me a different life. If, if consistently I'm going 23 years on an asset group and the prescribed life is 20, an easy way to fix this to change my prescribed life, slow it down a little bit consistently and make it match a little bit closer. One of the other things that needs to happen is the groups need to be proactive to make sure that if they're replacing a section of fiber or copper in their plant or whatever the asset is, that if there's a corresponding asset that came out of service, make sure we get that asset out of service, make sure we identify it. So stay active on our assets, make sure that we're doing our jobs on managing the assets, making sure that we're doing disposals as appropriate. The other way you can fix this group methodology is if we see the acceleration or the deceleration occurring, that the FCC has a formula that essentially takes a point in time and recalculates that group to reproject it based upon what the average life of the average remaining life of the group is at that snapshot point. So you could notice the acceleration and then you get to a point and you do the FCC formula and it readjusts that to kind of extend that back out to get it back in line again.
What triggers that?
So that is just watching it, watching for these symptoms. If we notice that assets are lasting longer than the prescribed life or shorter, then we'd look at that and it has to take some active management by the accounting group or the management of the company. So
since it is coming upon the utilities to that board of something, that would be derived from like an audit by the division, it would just be like the companies would kind of self-report or self-correct, I guess.
Well, could they correct or would they have to ask us for a change?
So the FCC, there's an FCC formula that allows for correction, and it's not extending lives of assets past the prescribed life, it's adjusting it to get back closer to what prescribed lives are.
Yes, yeah.
So it is a function that's built in right now. Now, but it is a good point because this is where the division needs to get comfortable that the depreciation expense isn't high or low, or that we're keeping items in the rate base as well. I mean, you've got two sides of the equation. You've got the expense side and the rate base side upon which we're earning a rate of return. So you need to be, this is just a balance between those two numbers. So it needs to be the right number, neither fast or slow, but provide for the correct rate base and the correct depreciation expense. So
with this group method, what's the rate base impact of an asset reaching the end of its depreciable life, the life that is the basis for the depreciation schedule? What's the rate base effect of that under group unadjusted?
It really depends on the size of the asset in question and the size of the group. And so an extreme example would be, and I don't think any of the companies have done this, but let's say we have a legacy switch that costs $15 million, and we purchase a new soft switch that is only, $1 million total. And if we mix those two groups together, and the $15 million asset is fully depreciated, and the asset life of the group happens to be $15 million, or I'm sorry, 15 years, then that new asset would disappear in the first year because you mixed that group. So if you have significantly large assets in the group that last past their prescribed life, then they can have that magnifying effect on the newer additions.
But I think generally, if the depreciation is accelerated, expenses going up, then the rate base is going to go down. So a company may get more expense, recognize a greater expense. They do that at the cost of a lower return on the rate of return because that rate base is down. So you gain expense, but you get a profitability.
Now again, you want that to match the real life of the assets. And again, this is all estimates as well.
Sure.
So we do our best with prescribed rates.
What I wanted to understand is the relationship the same as it is in single asset? The relationship between rate base and depreciation,
the
magnitude of the changes.
Now, the rate base isn't on single asset straight line. An older asset, once it's fully depreciated, has no bearing on the newer assets. But there's also a situation that is created by those assets upon disposal if they're disposed early. Because you haven't recognized all the depreciation expense that you needed to on that asset. So on disposal, you have to recognize the additional depreciation. So there's some little spikes that happen with single asset straight line depending on when it's disposed. So,
as I mentioned, group smooths that spikes out.
Maybe this helps answer the question also. It is a one-to-one relationship in either case, so every dollar that's expensed as a depreciation in a given year reduces the rate base by a dollar.
Yeah.
They're both going this way.
Yes.
This is a time difference.
Depreciation.
Yeah.
And the problem with the group method is if the prescribed time frame is off, it actually makes it worse, not better, essentially.
Say that one more time.
So it has the reverse effect in the standard formula from the SEC on group depreciation. If your actual life exceeds your prescribed rate life, then it accelerates depreciation, which what you would want to do is decelerate depreciation a little bit to match.
That's in the unadjusted
case. Right. And over long periods of time, it can really build up.
And the adjusted method tries to realign that.
Got to you.
Okay. Can I just ask, what is a typical, is a 20 year, what is this group right here? Is this copper or what is this group?
It's very copper.
Okay, yeah, that's 20 years. Years?
Yeah, close to it.
Okay.
60 years.
Some of us been in 60.
That's because Bill put it in.
Right. When you start.
Thank you.
I'm not sure the best way to approach looking at this, but under the group asset methodology, you can see that we build up our assets to a level that's $5.5 million here towards the end. And if you take $5.5 million and multiply it by our prescribed rate of 5% per year, that gives you the $275,000 here. And so once you build up to that level, if I were to just project that out to the end of its life, then it's done in 2027. And if you look at this asset purchase in 2017, that's only 10 years on that latest asset. But it's part of a group that, some of the assets are older and some of them are fully past the 20 years, and that's what's creating this magnifying effect. Now, that same asset under single asset straight line, many assets that are still in service in 2017. So depreciation is not significantly different, 275 versus 252 in that year. But you can see that last asset will last all the way through the 20 years, all the way out to 2036. So you see that's, 1/20th of the $1 million is that 50,000 in that last year. And the previous year before that included that 2016 edition and the 2017 edition. So you kind of see that the 16 amount ran out and then the 17 amount ran out, and it lasted its full, prescribed life by specifically identifying that asset.
And what's the blue, what's that method?
Single
asset.
So this one is a group method with no adjustment.
Okay.
Right. And then the second one, single asset straight line. And what's interesting is if you look at this, the group methodology stays fairly consistent. You don't see a lot of swings in it. I think it's high. It might be 295 right there. But it stays fairly consistent all the way through.
There's appreciation expense for the group.
For the group, yep. And there's a build-up period. We started at zero, so there's build-up period on all these methodologies. If you look at single asset straight line, it's a little different. It actually spikes right here at 360. So it had a year that kind of spiked. We had a disposal there that hadn't been fully depreciated, and we needed to recognize that additional expense. I just wanted to highlight the fact that single asset straight line has...
It's lumpier.
It is. It has some highs and some lows.
And then at the end, it's very low. And so, yeah.
And so you end up...
You can understand why the SEC rate. Kind of likes that. It's to smooth it out is a little bit better than it has these spikes.
So is this for event, additional filings for expense recovery? In other words, I mean, this smooths it out so you don't have to kind of...
Yeah. So each year is somewhat similar to the prior year for that group.
And assuming we've got an ongoing operation, you probably wouldn't see a run out like that. You know, we'd continue to add assets and take assets out. So, but I just wanted to kind of show this so you can kind of see the lifespan of what's left in the group in each of these methods. Now, in the green column here it's a hybrid between the two. It actually is just group with an adjustment. But the results end up being kind of a hybrid because you can see it extends the life past what the group would have done over here, but it doesn't allow that last asset to go all the way out to 2036. So it still treats it as a group. But what we've done at this point in time, and the adjustment, we did a one-time adjustment in 2017. What we've discussed with the division, and I think we're all in agreement on this, is that you'd want to do this more often, and you wouldn't let your asset group get too far out of line before you did the adjustment. And so I'm trying to show more of an extreme example, but a little bit of an exaggerated example here. But we did a one-time adjustment in 2017, and at that point, we determined that the average remaining life of the assets within the group was 14.78 years. And so this depreciation adjustment, if you look at how that occurred, there's a little bit in that last year, but that's 15 years with that last year being that partial, you know, 0.78 year. And so then the key is what is that formula? How do we apply it? And how subjective is it? And that's what we've been discussing as a group. There's different ways you could do that.
So the adjustment process isn't part of the FCC methodology. It is prescribed at any interval, or is it?
It's not.
It just says you have to do it in a reasonable way. Yeah.
And they basically say manage your assets, and when you see a problem, use this formula to correct it and get back on track again. Now, the way I did this, there's some different approaches you could use to come up with that average remaining life. But what I did in this scenario is I looked at the asset group and I kind of, I made it.
And Darren, this is the key number. Yeah. The average remaining life is the number that you need to make. So the question is, well, how subjective is it? How objective is it? How do you determine it?
Right.
So this is what we've been working on this morning, to try and find a way that makes Bill comfortable.
Trying to take the subjectivity out of it so we can put something in rule that will allow the companies to make this correction mathematically
and mechanically
and present it to the commission on a regular basis in maybe every 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Also, we're looking for a mechanical method that matches asset life. So,
just
mechanical.
Yeah, and would this be like company specific, or would this be for like a general class and apply to all of the
company specific?
So it wouldn't be.
This is group specific.
So the idea of this, I think, is it's self correcting.
But what I'm saying is, I'm assuming different companies have different lives
Right, so yeah. The average remaining life determination, which is the denominator in the formula, is going to be group, company, and account specific.
Okay.
Right.
So there isn't an unbiased source for this kind of information.
Well, I mean, there's not for the average remaining life when you're looking at
assets
in the field, are the assets in place? Because, I mean, that depends, you know, for one company, maybe they've got
vehicles. It's unique probably to every company, but I wonder if there was like
the example we have.
Well, I mean, it depends. If you're looking at a prescribed, I mean, there is unbiased opinion. I mean, you've got individuals here that work in multiple states that follow different guidelines within those states, and we're saying it's all within range. Or you have different companies like our own who travel most of the state, where we have assets that last a lot shorter than those that have one city that is basically their service territory. Mm-hmm. So if
well,
you take
we have a good example here. We have Beehive here, and we have Direct over here. And Beehive does the entire West Desert, and Direct does a suburb of Orem.
Right, so we can run a vehicle over 120,000 miles in 3 years very easily, and whereas you know Direct take quite a longer time to do that. but to the point they're trying to make is that you know we still follow the unbiased prescribed rate, which is 5 years on a truck, and we still follow that method. It's just that we may not capture all the depreciation you know the way other companies may.
The key here is that there's a prescribed rate, which is this rate that we start with. Mm-hmm. And this adjusted method creates an effective rate. And the effective rate is reflective of the average usable life of the assets that are in service for that company.
And it's not the effective rate is not meant to extend depreciation past the prescribed life, but it is meant to correct for deceleration or acceleration, depending on which side of the coin you're on.
Of course, progress.
Yep. So in the case here, what I assumed in this example is that my assets were lasting 22 to 23, 24 years, some of them. And so with a 20-year prescribed life and some of my assets extending out to that period, we knew we had an issue. Now, my oldest assets are still in service. So I can't say that those assets have zero life, even though they're past the prescribed life, they're still in service. So what I did is I tried to determine what my average, I did a weighted average of what I thought those assets' lives were. And I started at 25 and backed that down. So I said the newest edition in 2017 probably has, from my experience with this account, a 25-year life. And then 2016 would have a 24-year life and it would back down. And then when I got to one, I just kept one on all those older assets because they're actually still in service. And
these are weights that he's going to use in order to make the calculation.
To try to come up with what I think the average weighted value of the life is. So I did that, and I hope I'm not losing you here. This is so you can see I had a remaining average, a remaining life estimate, 25 years, 24, and you can see that backing back down. And then to the right, you can see that there's assets that still live within those ages. So there's some vintage, you know, 2000, or was that 1995? Mm-hmm. That still has some value. Now, all my 1990 stuff was gone at that point. But as you can see, as I got back down to two and then one, I just kept one remaining on anything that might have been out there. And then what I did is I multiplied my initial investment by the number of remaining life years. And this was the weighting. So I took, you know, this 3 times this original investment, which I think was $100,000. So I get $300,000. And then the next one is 4 years times this $250,000. So it weights to $1,000,000. And then I did that for each of those asset groups. And I weighted that last asset group as $1,000,000 times 25 years. So it weights to $25 million. And then I took the sum of that. It was like $81 million, and divided it by my outstanding investment, which is the $5.5 million as of that date. And that gave me a weighted average remaining life of that group. Now, there might have been sections of my 1990 table that were in a construction zone that just got chopped up, and it needs to really be replaced and probably only has a 17-year life or whatever. There may have been some other areas that are pristine and they're out in the middle of nowhere that might last 30 years. And so, you know, this is a way that we looked at it, saying, well, without more information, we know that the assets are lasting a little longer. But without specifically identifying each segment of the plant and trying to come up with what the weighted average life is, this is a kind of a proxy for that, and it's fairly reasonable. And so this is the method we took just in this example. And so we came up with 14.83 years, and then you take the remaining life or the remaining value of the asset, and you use that to create a new rate, and then that rate's again applied back to that base value of 5.5 million. So in this case, we started at 5%, and our new effective rate is 3.11%, and that just slows down that that depreciation rate, so it extends the life of that asset for another 6 or 7 years in there. So that's kind of the basis for what that calculation does. And then you would, theoretically, this asset group would plug along, and there'd be more additions and more disposals from the group, and you would look at that a few years later and determine if it was still reasonable or not. And you'd have additional experience with that group. You'd kind of know what your assets are doing within the group and that kind of thing.
And there may be an asset that Bill installed, and it's encased in amber, and it's going to live forever. Okay? And so when we have that situation, we're kicking around the idea of saying, okay, let's take the 90th percentile of the assets, rank ordered from most recent to distant. Take the 90th percentile of that and say that's where the life, you know, where the calculation of life is. In this particular example, it was 25. It might be 27, you know, what have you. But some type of break off so we don't have these outliers skewing the objectivity of the number. And that gets away from such subjectivity. It becomes a little more objective, and I think Bill is becoming more comfortable with it, but we'll all have to speak to that.
So the 3.11% is about the 32-year. Life, and this group of assets started with a prescribed 20-year life. And so this is a pretty extreme example because the correction was made so far.
Should have been made 35 years or something. But this addresses the division's concerns that we've had over the last several years. Assets in groups that last well beyond the prescribed life and can accelerate depreciation.
Right.
And so by applying some type of technique like this, you can modify that rate, and if it's done periodically, then that rate should stay. What this does is it drives it towards the actual useful life of the assets that are being in the group.
Yeah, because we know with the first example, I mean, the customers sort of catch up in the end game, but there is never an end game. You're just adding.
So that the companies are forced to add to keep that group going.
Yeah, that's the concern. So,
okay. I think this, if you started early, if the actual life is typically 25 years instead of 20, it would start to normalize pretty quickly in the first few adjustments around 25.
So when is this test? It's like, this is something that's corrected by the companies, but is this something that's like, is there like a double check in time and a case to actually match up to see if it accomplished the goals that we set up to do? In other words, is there again, it sounds like there's the company, the utilities do the first, they have the right or they have the ability to correct with this, but then ultimately how's that tested?
I think it would be a test that the company would have to do and present to the commission, and then you guys would send it to us and we'd have to check and see if it's reasonable.
And thinking about where the companies are now and what methods they get you, what's the transition to the adjusted method where the company would be, each company at some 3 to 5 year interval would be re-looking at each of these? Is the first time the company does that, is there going to be a large impact, and what do we know about that?
Go to the year 2017 for yellow and green, will you please? So in 2017, we had $275,000 in depreciation expense.
2018 is the first year we're going to call
it. And it drops.
Yeah, 2018, 275 in yellow, that would be kind of unadjusted group that companies may be doing. You have straight line, which is blue, which we don't have to worry about because none of this applies to single asset straight line. Single asset straight line follows its own track. And then over here, you have, if there was, say, okay, there's an adjustment, everybody's been not adjusting properly. If there is acceleration in the groups, then you would see that, you know, a group would normally have a decline in depreciation expense.
And if it was the reverse, it would be, what's going to happen?
We don't.
In reality, yeah, we don't really have no way to.
It would be driven along by the level of activity that the company's had.
How proactive
those have been.
If they've been disposing of those assets, retiring, if they've kept.
Well, that's been pretty vigorous, then what would you expect?
It'd be a minimal impact, or be a lesser impact.
And if the assets are newly placed, it would be less.
And we do have at least three companies that use single asset straight line, and then most of the other companies have at least some accounts that are using
also
a single asset straight line. So that minimizes some of the impact on the companies. But there will still be, and there could be, you know, going both ways, but there will be some adjustment.
So when we slow down the depreciation expense in blue in this example, you're going to have increased rate base and you're going to have increased return,
right?
Your rate base is higher. And so you actually have rate base, you have return on rate base for a longer period of time.
Right.
So it's a balance, like Justin was saying, it's a balance.
If it's an ongoing group that has just had the wrong prescribed rate applied to it, the correction, in this case where the depreciation was too high, what you would see over time is it'll drop down to essentially start the correction for a period, and it will rise back up to where, in that case, I think where it would normalize would be somewhere around like 240,000 or something. I think we would climb back up to that over a period of time as it kind of normalizes on that 25-year depreciation life instead of 20. But in the first few years, even it was probably extreme fluctuations even there. We haven't seen some companies in quite a while, so I don't know that they have a great.
Yeah, it's hard to have a feel for what the effects would be.
Yeah, and I think it would be realistic to expect requests from some companies in the first few years to moderate this change if it's going to potentially squeeze some enough that their cash flow would become a problem, like an operational problem. Need to spread it out over a longer period of time, but I'm not sure we don't really know.
I think the theory is that we would provide enough information in the annual report for Bill's group to be able to evaluate, and your staff as well. And so that's kind of what we're looking at in the rule side of the equation is what mechanisms can we identify that would help them determine the reasonableness, and what additional information do we need to provide to allow them to do that. So
that's the group method. And
we have an example of
the deceleration.
The reverse of this.
Yes, reverse side.
Just from our experience, it seems more likely that the long-term assets seem to last longer than their life, and the shorter assets, the vehicles and those things seem to last a little shorter than
predicted. Some companies would take vehicles and they would do single asset straight line. They wouldn't use it for like vehicles. Just running it, right?
A lot of reference of vehicles is that in relation to the various accounts, is that a heavy one? I would think it's electronics.
Yeah, well, the copper is the longest line. I mean, copper and fiber, your infrastructure plant.
Right.
So your electronics used to be electronics lived longer, now they're living a little shorter.
Shorter, I would think,
and then
yeah.
And then software is even shorter than that.
Right.
And then vehicles or whatever, you know.
Whatever they are, and the copper's.
And switching used to be a long lived asset, now it's a short software based asset.
What's that?
The switching used to be a longer asset,
yeah.
And now with soft switches, it's
yeah.
It's more of a software based
yeah, sure.
7-year replacement cycle right. Type thing. So.
The steppers, where are they when we need them?
In the crossbar.
I don't even know what that is.
I know
what steppers
are.
I know
stepper. Yeah. Hey, you know, that's a retirement project, though. You could run the crossbar stepper switch.
Yeah, what third world country?
I do think an issue that you address, you know, what will happen and
yeah,
the swing.
Yeah, yeah.
One that concerns those of us who are reporting this to the federal
yeah, sure.
side
yeah.
concerns us is there we will have to answer some questions because at this point what we report is we use the prescribed rate from the PSC.
Uh-huh.
And so it's 5%, so on our federal filings and all the information there, we use that prescribed report, and that makes sense to them, and everybody says this is great, we're fine and dandy. When suddenly we go to a 3.11% or a 7.11%, whichever way that happens to go, the feds will have some concern about, you know, us trying to explain it to them,
yeah.
And when we say, well, that's because that's what the state told us,
yeah.
You all probably have an idea of what this federal people think about your authority. We're going to have to deal with that and have to address that. They're going to say, now you're manipulating your rate base. And, you know,
right.
While you know, we've sat here, and I think we've had a very productive meeting, and I like this methodology. I think there's some great things here. I also am concerned, as
yeah.
Right, but when it goes into practice, and, you know, I'm explaining
well,
it to somebody in Washington, D.C.
The one response is, he's going to say to the feds that he's doing what the states are doing. And then you're going to come back and say, we're just following the FCC prescribed method.
Exactly.
But, I mean, that is...
Yeah, sure.
You know, as well as finance, you know, banks, RUS, Covenant, you know, whoever we use for financing, they're going to want some explanations as well. But,
yeah.
And it depends on how material that is. I mean, the
right,
rate
right.
might vary, but the group might be small enough so it doesn't affect the overall
right.
appreciation.
Well, that's the ultimate goal. But to your point you were making earlier, there is already a trade-off to de-incentivize us from doing anything that's going to try to game the system with depreciation expense itself.
Yeah.
If depreciation is accelerated, you're going to see that on the rate base side already.
Yeah.
So there already is something to de-incentivize this process.
And we've got to be careful not to go too out of step with what other states and other jurisdictions do. Drex, a prime example, they've got assets that are probably shared across state lines. And just within the companies, we have different prescribed rates, and they're shared assets. And so we depreciate it as company A or company B within the same company. But it can be extreme if you're going across state lines and trying to report different jurisdictions. What do you do with that asset?
What is the typical? Is there a typical? What are state? What's the trend? I guess.
Well, what we find, I do accounting for five different states, and they're all pretty darn close. The prescribed rates that we use from one state to the next is very close.
And they use a group methodology.
And we use group methodology for the most part. We do some like our vehicles. We'll do actually vintage. So instead of looking at each individual truck, look at all the trucks that got put in service in 2018, and look at those together.
And do any of them have this adjustment mechanism?
This Utah is the only state where this is, that I'm aware of, that's even being discussed and looked at as something that, nobody likes group or mass value depreciation. We didn't learn it in college. Nobody ever taught it to us. It's made up for the telecommunications and utilities world. Nobody likes it. But everybody recognizes, in my experience, everybody recognizes that it is the best of a bunch of bad answers. And so it's the methodology that works. And when we report to the federal level, they say, what are you using depreciation? We send in the prescribed rate schedule that we get from each individual state. And that's what we use. And like I said, Utah is the only state of the five that I'm familiar with that's even particularly bothered by the depreciation rate.
So in the other states, if there's acceleration or deceleration,
I would like to say that's because the regulator are making the assumption that the accountants at the phone companies are doing a great job of staying on top of their asset classes and they're moving stuff in and out. Because if you do that, I mean, if we manage it aggressively and the prescribed rate's pretty close to the real rate, then it kind of smooths itself. Like I say, I would love to think that's what the regulator is thinking. They may be thinking this is not a fight worth having, so we don't really.
Do they have state USFs?
Yeah, some do, some don't, yes.
Yeah, because that's really that's the bottom line, is that if your price list or whatever your, you know, whatever's driving the pricing is competitive, then it's not, you know.
Right, yeah,
not
three of our states have USF, the other two.
Yeah. That's what makes you ticklish about this, huh?
So you want to do the deceleration?
Yeah,
if you could walk us through this quick.
So I won't go into all of the assumptions again. It's the same spreadsheet, just with a little bit different assumption. In this one, we have a 10-year asset, and I've kind of designed it so the assets are really only lasting about 8 to 9 years, and so they disappear from the group a little quicker than their prescribed life would have indicated. And so what happens is they're not fully depreciated, and so that remaining value stays in the group and needs to be depreciated over the life of the remaining assets in the group. So when that happens consistently over time, it builds up, and then you're not getting rid of them fast enough.
Yeah.
And so this one, it was actually a little more extreme. You can kind of see the run out down here. With the group asset methodology, it took all the way down to 2045 to get rid of this little group of 10-year assets that stopped in 2017. So, you know, they should have been gone by 27 at the soonest, or, you know, is what you guess, but, you know, just by formulaic example, they lasted a lot longer. Single asset straight line, you can see it ended right when it was, when you'd expect it. 10 years after 2017. Again, there's a little bit of fluctuation in depreciation by year because we're getting rid of these assets quicker. So every time we do that, we have to recognize the additional expense to make that occur. So again, it has a
spiky,
yeah, a little bit more bumpy. And then they stay in sync a lot less time too, because our first asset disposal happened before its 10-year life ended. So you start seeing differences in depreciation right off the bat, and you can see that first spike hit right there, 455, to get rid of the additional, you know, portion of the $1 million original investment that hadn't been depreciated yet. Under this scenario, what I did is I got down to the end here, and in 2017, I didn't give it a full, you know, 7-year life, but I said, well, I know they're not lasting a full 10. I'm just going to go 9 on that one and 8 on the year before, and everything else is already gone. So there wasn't even any asset additions in these other years right through here to even try to consider. And so I basically only had 2 years worth of assets left, and I said, you know, if I wait that, it's going to be somewhere between 8 and 9 years. You can kind of see that visually right there. And that's where it ended up, you know, 8.17 years. And then I run that out, and you see our depreciation was at 60,000 without adjusting the group, and that matches over here, 60,000. That was not adequate in the least bit, and we had to jump it all the way to 200,000 to get rid of the rest of those assets over a 9-year period. And that took the effective rate from 10% all the way up to 33% to do that. So this is a very extreme example.
Well, I was going to say the spike is as big as the spike in the
single asset straight line.
Yeah. Just it comes at a different time.
Right.
So if you don't do the adjustment, then you're going to have a spike. And if you do the adjustment on a periodic basis, it's smooth.
It's going to smooth it out. Yeah.
So hopefully we don't get to these extreme
examples. Right. But again, it makes me think, so the transition, when you start, you know, that first time
first submission
scares me. I mean, I don't know, how do we get comfort about what are the unintended consequences of this, of a new?
I think these guys are worth it.
Well,
the unintended consequences.
Yeah, but I'm if suddenly there's there's $10 million of USF pressure here in the first year because of something that we didn't understand, you know. But
the Fed would ask NECA to do a data collection. Mm-hmm. We'd all squeal and cry for the next 6 months while we try to put together the data collection. And then we'd wait 3 years for the Fed to make a decision.
Yeah,
But a data collection is not a bad way to go.
Yeah,
you can get it preliminary.
That's a little un.
You know, we could all look at this and kind of get some kind of forecast and build this model out using our own specific numbers and say, what do we think it might be?
I'm just thinking out loud.
Or there's a
what
transition.
You would need to do to sort of reach a conclusion on what you'd like to call it. I don't know. We'd have to get all of the company's filings, all of their analysis to look at. I wouldn't venture a guess as to what would do USF right now. But but is that a step that we need to take before we decide, before we commit to a direction on this, before we adopt a rule that says?
So you want to do an analysis before?
Well, I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
Well, if you have
what's
it in
the,
if you
what
have
are the
in
risks?
If you have it in the rule that the company is actually filing and then the division gets to check its reasonableness,
mm-hmm.
That's a governor on.
Yeah, I suppose.
Right?
Yeah, I suppose.
You know.
Yeah.
But would it answer the question what it does initially to the everybody's
It wouldn't, but it would, well, it would at least provide an off-ramp if we didn't like what it did initially, if it was unreasonable.
Or to set up a transition period, you know, saying, okay, this is a big mm-hmm. splash in a small pool, and we've got to, you know, we've got to gradually phase this in as opposed to just doing it one time, right?
So what are you thinking in terms of timeline and next steps in terms of, it sounds like you're still kind of giving comfort up on this, but what are you thinking in terms of the next steps or I guess a potential joint filing here?
Oh, well, I think we were thinking of
right.
a joint filing
right.
with proposed language, right?
Yep.
I don't know how long that would take, a month or a couple
yeah.
weeks anyway. But as to how much impact it's going to have, we would have to get everybody's analysis
that we would need to work through.
Yeah.
We would need the companies who do single asset straight line, maybe anybody who did single asset straight line.
There's older shock to the USF. And it could be a big rock for USF.
It could be either. I think the key will be the language that provides the flexibility to adapt whatever is in place. If we see consequences that are not acceptable.
And maybe shock. Whatever shock goes to USF, the inverse of that goes to the companies. Some struggle with it. Some
Is there any folks who are anticipating or they're waiting on this, in other words, to be resolved before cancer? I mean, obviously that's confidential.
We've been kicking around this. The breakthrough today was to try to objectify this
mm-hmm.
average useful
yeah.
life. And so the only people that know about this are the people in this room, you know, and the people that are listening. So that's the only, the companies that use group, Bill, you probably could corral them and say, okay, what is going to be the expectation on this? What's the splash for your company? Using mm-hmm. an adjustment.
I mean, they would have to go down. I mean, they would have to sit down and go through their records.
Yeah.
And then they'd have to understand this first of all. They'd go through their records and
right.
present something that would be different depreciation expense than what they're reporting on their annual report
right.
this month.
Right.
So at that point, it would be fairly easy to quantify it.
That brings up a good point that this is not the final proposal by
this is what we just
sure.
Yeah.
This is progress.
It's helpful to know, though.
Yeah.
This is progress. You're making progress. That's helpful to know.
So stay tuned on our
good
party.
Now, there's a
yeah,
second item. Do you want to talk about the prescribed rates at all?
Well, just
exactly
it's still under discussion.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for doing, thanks for doing all the hard work up front.
That's helpful. It wasn't fun to do, I'm sure.
Well, he's because he's so excited.
This is my lip one.
Can we get a copy of the spreadsheet? Yeah, I'll
Yeah. Weird, I know, but.
Send it to Fred, I guess. Okay.
Oh, do you have an adjustment?
No, we just have a typo of this guy.
That looks like you have a, some.
H-A-B instead of ABJ.
As long as I thank you, everybody. Oh, this is much better than the ABJ.
Oh, I tell you, this is in progress, and we'll just stay tuned for the next phase, and if there's a need for another meeting like this, depending on what kind of progress is made, we'll stay tuned.
Okay.
Yeah. We're excited to start our meeting on Thursday, so.
Yeah,
we're here Thursday.
No, we're not here for cross issues.
Thanks.
Very
good.
Don't move out that door.
Oh, okay.